So this is the first day of our retreat here at the Southern Dharma. Beautiful Southern Dharma. The skies are blue. The flowers, the smells, the birds. So far it's been the Pure Land. So this is the first day of our retreat on Fettering the Natural Mind, the Path of Clear Seeing. I hope already you are wondering, what is this natural mind that is fettered? And what is an unnatural mind? What is it that fetters the natural mind? Please don't wait for me to give all the answers. Already you can be wondering, questioning. What is my natural mind? Before we begin, I just want to mention a few things that I forgot to mention yesterday. In terms of the schedule, this is a group retreat, and the way we do our group retreats is that we do it together. I know there are some retreats which are group retreats where people can pick and choose, but this is not that kind of retreat. We flow as a river, as we say in our tradition, which means we all flow together. And I think it's very good for us to be in a situation where we can't pick and choose. Since pick and choosing is usually the work of the self and our conditioning, and so to have to comply, to have to get this self that likes to pick and choose, and I feel like doing this, and I don't feel like this, and I prefer to do this, and I'd rather not do that. This is all the activity of the fabricated mind, that mind which is the reason you are here. So we don't want to indulge that mind. So it's good for us to have a schedule that we follow impeccably, whether we like it or not. And if you don't like it, good. Please look deeply into that self that does not like. And at the same time, if there are things you like, look deeply into that. It's the same self that likes. As you heard this morning, the great way has no difference between liking and disliking when all preferences are set aside. Well, that's what this means. It's easy to say it, but it means. So we come and go throughout the retreat as one. Let me also say, please show up on time, and the meditation hall, people who are in charge of the meditation hall, take their responsibility seriously, and so if you are not in the hall, they will think there's something wrong with you. You've gone into cardiac arrest somewhere. You're laying on the bathroom floor. Okay, so they will come look for you. So please don't make them do that if all is well. If there is something wrong with you, please send a note. I mean, just grab somebody else and send a note to them so they know that you are sick. So again, that may be something that we can do. Also, in terms of the schedule, like I think there was some problem this morning with the wake-up bell. Even though everybody has assignments, please also use your common sense. If there's 6 o'clock and nobody's been ringing the bell, go find the bell and ring it. All right. I mean, we are in Fettering the Natural Mind, so. So please, again, on the other hand, if you feel like a bell should be rung, that's probably not a good reason to go ring the bell. But if you're very clear, you check the schedule, you know a bell is supposed to be rung at this time, and it's not, please go ahead and ring it. Let me just say something else which ties in a little bit what I said about preferences. When I happened to come into the latter part of the orientation, I believe Steve was outlining all these wonderful hikes, inviting everybody to enjoy the hikes. There are many opportunities we have in life to enjoy hikes. But the purpose of this retreat is to unfetter the natural mind in the path of clear seeing. This mind of ours, it loves something new. It loves activity. Right? This day I can walk up to the meadow, and this day I can explore this. And, you know, it likes to be entertained. This is the problem. Right? I would much rather that we learn to walk the same path we walk every day and always see it fresh. That's why we're here. It actually is fresh and new. And the only reason we don't see it is because our mind, we'll go into that over the next 7 days. So again, it is good to be constrained. We want our self and our conditioning to feel constrained. So some of you may already go, oh, I don't like that. I was really looking forward to taking that walk, right? What is it that says that? Right? I mean, the walk is actually something physical, isn't it? I mean, are your feet saying that? Take me up the meadow? No. When you get up there, you'll look around. Is it your eyes are saying, take me to a new place? I want to see something new. No. Is it your nose that smells? Is it your ears that hear saying, give me something new? I'm bored with the same old? No. What is it? That's what we're here to find out. It is that which is fettering us. So, in this type of practice, as Thich Nhat Hanh says, the true miracle is to walk upon the earth. Right? That earth doesn't have to be different every day to experience that. Is that clear? So please practice in that way. The miracle is right here. We don't have to manufacture it. Waking up is about waking up to what is already here that we don't see. So in retreat, we want to be restrained, even though we may not like it. We want to be constrained, even though we may not like it. Because actually the truth is our minds are free. There's no constraint at all. So please look at all your thoughts and feelings about being constrained, or I don't like what he's saying, or I wish, you know, Bob, that's good. Take a look at that. Where's that coming from? What is that? Is that clear? Good. Good. And already... we have had silence, and I happened to look out my window and saw people raking in the meadow. Right. Silence. Right. So in silence, you know the only noise is coming from where? Right. So that's the benefit of silence. Perhaps already you've noticed, right? There's nothing going on here, is there? Anybody notice that? There's nothing going on here. Right? We wake up, we eat, we sit, we walk, birds sing, you know, clouds pass through the sky. That's all that's going on. Right? If we have any stuff, it's all arising where? In our minds. So in a retreat like this, it is our minds that we will be focusing on. Why with everything so peaceful, is my mind not peaceful? Right? It's a good question. What stirs it up? It's not the external winds, is it? No. So good. So this retreat and the subject matter of this retreat, Unfettering the Natural Mind, the Path of Clear Seeing, I want to back up a bit. Because even though we will be spending a significant amount of time on that path, that path arises in a context of practice and study, which needs to be understood. We need to understand the context in which we practice. As I often say, Dharma is big picture. We need the big picture. We are people who are totally involved in the small picture, the daily dramas of self. The daily news. And in the daily drama of self, in the daily news, there's always something going on and there's always something to react to, right? So we are constantly driven by emotionality and reactivity. But when you see the big picture, that which arises in the moment, that which arises in the realm of experience from moment to moment, has a context, so you can understand and deal wisely with whatever is arising. You know, but we want the immediate solution. This is the problem, tell me what to do, Fred. Right? This is the problem, what practice should I be applying here? Right? We never think that maybe the problem is arising because I don't have the big picture. We think the problem is here, but the problem is really over here. As I was saying to somebody yesterday, I think it was to Ken, who was talking to me about something in his life, and I said, when we're in the briar patch, we want somebody to tell us how to get out, right? It's not a lot of fun being having wandered into a briar patch. But let's talk a minute about what a briar patch is and how do you recognize a briar patch and how do you live in a certain way that you never go into them. See, if you get this straight, you never need all the skills to get out of the briar patch. Is that clear? But to do that, we have to, we have to do what we tell our teenagers to do. It can't always be immediate gratification. So I want to spend a little time talking about the big picture of practice and realization as a setting. So when we begin to climb the mountain of the immaculate pristine view, we know what we're up to, and we have a good foundation. In our community, Florida Community of Mindfulness, I think as most of you know, we have a model of practice that we have, we say, has three circles. It's a developmental model of practice and realization. So I want to spend a little time today talking about that. Now, having said that, there may be people here who are saying, "Oh, I know all that. Oh, I hope he's not going to talk about." I hope he's not going to bring up the four mind turnings. You know, I don't. God or bodhicitta or you know, I know all that stuff. If you know all that stuff, then you wouldn't be here. You are here, we are here, because we don't know that stuff. Because we think to get it up here is to get it here. Practice is about getting it from here to here. And that takes time, to get it from here to here. It takes repetition, 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 study, practice, reflect, retreats, intensives. Until it finally gets in here. When it gets in here, and we'll talk about that, we will know it. Because each of those reflections has a realization. And when it's realized, things change. How do we know things change? Because we are no longer suffering. We're no longer caught in affliction. Life is no longer about dramas and melodramas and ups and downs and issues. All that is gone. So it is very important that we cultivate the foundation of practice, and even as we develop, we continue to cultivate that foundation. Right? So even when you build your house, make sure always that your foundation is strong. You have to check it. So in our community, in our path of practice, we say the first level of practice, we call it the circle of mindful living. This is learning that we have this capacity to be present to whatever is arising. These are the four foundations of mindfulness. Mindful, aware of what's in my body and how my body is feeling and what it's like to be in it. Right. Mindful of my breath. Mindful of feelings, sensations. Mindful of the mind, the tendencies of the mind, the emotions that arise, the thoughts, the perceptions, the memories, the belief. Right. The capacity to be aware of that, and the capacity to be aware of all the objects of the senses. That when we look, we are actually seeing, and smelling, and hearing, and tasting. Okay. This is the foundation. This clarifies, this stabilizes, this simplifies endless benefits. It makes life much richer. Because we're present to it. We're no longer absent. Also in the path of mindful living, there is equally the path of emotional healing. Many people want to skip over their stuff. But stuff needs to be addressed, different than in a therapeutic way. But we have to learn how to be present to those things that still are fettering us, those mind states that are still afflicting us and still causing us to react in unskillful ways. And we have to heal those places within us that need healing through the capacity to be present, to embrace, to look deeply and understand, so these parts of ourselves can be transformed. If you do not do that, because you'd rather not have to deal with that stuff, because you're sick of that stuff, because you don't like the way that stuff feels, I want to jump to the big stuff. I want the second path and the highest path. You will never get there. Even if you get there, it will be unsettled because your foundation is skewed, is weak. And there are many people who practice quite diligently and wonder why there's a sense that they can't really make any progress. They keep falling back. It is often because it is at that kind of level of the emotions and the conditioned conditioning. We still have not seen deeply into it, and we have not been attentive enough with mindfulness, with concentration, with looking deeply, all the attributes, all the tools that we have. We can use them for this. We have to have an approach to our life, an approach to our Dharma practice that is completely open. I am open to whatever arises externally, and I am open to whatever arises internally. I am no longer living life with a very constricted agenda and always trying to manage. Many people spend their life managing and strategizing their internal and their external life, trying to keep it under control. There is another way, which is complete openness and acceptance and a willingness to use the tools for whatever or wherever they're needed. So again, in this retreat, we begin first day with the practices of mindfulness. Mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of the breath, mindfulness of the mind. Right. That's our ground. If we can't see clearly what's going on, how can we heal and transform? How can we look deeply into? Is that clear? Any questions about that? Is everybody awake? Is everybody sitting up straight, wide awake? Don't think that I'm speaking to your intellects. I don't put much store in intellects. There's something deeper that I'm doing my best to speak to. Please be awake so you can receive it. So that is the first path. And again, please establish that from the first day. Mindfulness is your basis. Just being present. When walking, just walk. When sitting, just sit. When eating, just eat. When bathing, just bathe. When looking, when just looking, right? And you can even be mindful of thoughts. Oh, I am aware that this thought has arisen in my mind. I'm aware that it's this kind of thought or that kind of thought. That is the practice of mindfulness. Mindfulness is not simply being present. Mindfulness also has the capacity to be aware and categorize what is arising. I'm mindful that this is an angry thought, or I'm mindful this is a sad thought, or I'm mindful this is a judgmental thought. See, mindfulness, you know, has that capacity, and mindfulness also has the capacity of remembering where we're supposed to be. Oh, I'm not supposed to be thinking about it. Remember we talked yesterday? Oh, I'm not supposed to be thinking about the past. I'm not supposed to be thinking about the future. I'm not supposed to be. Oh, why is that? That's mindful. So when you're doing that, you are being mindful. You're aware of what's arising in your mind. You know what it is, and you know whether it's in accord with where you want to be. This is all the function of mindfulness, right? For those of you who've been in recent intensives, you know mindfulness in Shantideva and the Bodhisattva path is called the gatekeeper. Right. Mindfulness is at the gate of our minds. It lets us know what is coming in. And it also has a criteria. It understands what this thought is, what this feeling is, what this perception is. And it allows us to know whether this is something to be accepted, something to be rejected, something to be worked with. Okay. That's all the function of mindfulness. Is that clear? So mindfulness is the basis, is the first foundation. Please be cultivating mindfulness throughout this retreat. That means not only when you're in public space, but when you're in private space. You're not fooling anybody. If when you get back into your room or behind your screen, you just kind of indulge this mind, right? If that's the case, you know that you have not embraced the practice yet. You're still practicing like as a public face. It really hasn't, you haven't taken ownership of it. When you take ownership of it, you really understand what it's about, you want to practice it wherever you are. Because you're practicing it for who? You're practicing it for you. You're practicing it for your aspiration to all beings. And that should not be something that's just based on public face. Again, if you notice that that's what you're doing, please look into that. That tells you something. That tells you something about who? About yourself. And about your aspiration and your diligence. And this is not to shame us. This is to help us understand so we know those areas where we need to work. Don't be afraid to shine the light on yourself. Actually, I was thinking of that. There's a wonderful poem. It's called Advice from Me to Myself by the great 19th century Tibetan teacher Patchel Rinpoche. Patchel Rinpoche, as some of you know, wrote Words of My Perfect Teacher. Patchel Rinpoche was considered like a living Buddha almost. Just an incredibly wonderful practitioner. Even though he was given all kinds of honors, he refused to play any role in any monastery or temple. He just wandered about. Anybody gave him money, an offering, he'd give it to the next person who showed up. Had a complete disdain for all worldly activities, even religious institutional ones. He was a great practitioner, and he was also one of the founders of what was known as the Rime movement in eastern Tibet, which was a non-sectarian movement. He even though he came from one tradition, he actually studied and practiced in all tradition and would teach all traditions. So he founded this non-denominational movement, and he was a strong reformer of Buddhism in eastern Tibet. In the 19th century. So he is a great practitioner, right? So he wrote this thing called Advice from Me to Myself. And it begins, Listen up, old bad karma petrel. You dweller in distraction. For ages now you've been beguiled, entranced, and fooled by appearances. Are you aware of that? Are you? So this is the way we should talk to ourselves. Many of us think, oh, I'm a pretty good practitioner. You know, you dweller in distraction. He certainly has us nailed on that one. For ages you've been beguiled, entranced, and fooled by appearances. Appearances are what? The way things appear. We think things appear attractive, or we think things appear ugly. We think things are enticing. We think things are permanent. We think things are endowed with certain kind of qualities that if we get them, somehow we will be different. We will be happy. We will, right? We're endlessly, right? Fooled by appearances. He says, beguiled and transfooled. Are you aware of that? Are you? He says, right at this very instant when you're under the spell of mistaken perception, you've got to watch out. Somebody once said, all perceptions are deception. All perceptions are deceptions. Something just the mind has fabricated. You've got to watch out. Do we watch out as our mind fabricates some little melodrama about this person or that person or this situation or that, or even about ourselves? Right? Do we realize we're under the spell of mistaken perception? As Thich Nhat Hanh says, do we say, is it true? Do we subject all our perceptions to the criteria, is it true? Do I know it's absolutely true, what I'm thinking about this or that? If you subject your perception to that criteria, you may be surprised. That very few meet that criteria. You got to watch out. Don't let yourself get carried away by this fake and empty life. We don't like that one, do we? We like our life. We like the things in our life, right? And many of us are practicing Dharma because we want to enjoy it even more. This Dharma stuff is good. I can enjoy my life even more. Why does he call this life fake and empty? This is the life of the most people lead. Life of activity, of gaining, of career, of family. You know, why does he call it fake and empty? What is a fake? A fake is something that's what? Not real. Why is this reality fake? Because it's not real. It appears real. But in truth, there's nothing of any substantiability, nothing of any permanence in any of it. As well as many of the things that we find attractive or we are drawn to do not deliver what they promise, and we all know that, don't we? And yet we continue on. Don't let yourself get carried away. Your mind is spinning around about carrying out a lot of useless projects. It's a waste. Give it up. How many people here have their minds spinning around with projects? Yeah, endlessly we spin around with projects. Project after project. Decades and decades of projects. And at the end of that all, what? That's one way of looking at it. We haven't gotten to that part yet. That is the big one. That is certainly true. We die. We endlessly, and it's like with the walks. We're endlessly creating things to do, and then we do them, and then we, you know, and then when they're done, we have to what? We have to do more. I mean, why can't we just do one project and say that's it for life? No, because there's nothing intrinsic of value in these projects. It doesn't mean we don't, in this life, we don't have activities that we do, but he's saying our minds are just, this is what we're focused on. This is where our energy is. This is what concerns us. This is what makes us happy or gets us frustrated or makes us angry or makes us disappointed or makes us anxious and worried that we won't get our projects done. I mean, this is the drama of our life. Right? No wonder there's no time for Dharma. No wonder there's no peace of mind. No wonder there's no stability, no clarity. There's no room for it, is there? It's a waste. Give it up. Thinking about the 100 plans you want to accomplish with never enough time to finish them just weighs down your mind. Now, this is a guy who lived out in the mountains. How did he know all this? Just observed. Thinking about 100 plans you want to accomplish with never enough time to finish them, we call that what? Stress. We're stressed. So many things to do, so little time. How am I going to get it all done? It just weighs down your mind. You're completely distracted by all these projects which never come to an end, but keep spreading out like ripples in water. Don't be a fool. For once, just sit tight. It's like Thich Nhat Hanh says, you know, don't just do something, just stand there. It's the opposite of what we were told as young, right? Don't just stand there, do something. Thich Nhat Hanh said, stop doing things and just stand there. This is what Rinpoche is saying, the same. We're never going to see the truth of what he's saying if we don't stop. And ask ourselves these deeper questions about what's really going on, what really has value, what really has meaning. What really gives satisfaction? If we never ask these questions, we will be endlessly caught in this world of projects and activities and ups and downs, and we'll take all our emotional life will be based on that. Then he goes on to Dharma. Listening to the teachings, as we are doing right now. He says, listening to the teachings, you've already heard hundreds of teachings, but you haven't grasped the meaning of even one teaching. Any truth to that? We love to hear teachings. Oh, another retreat. More teachings. Right? A new Dharma book. A new Dharma podcast. Right? A new issue of Tricycle or Shambhala Sun. More Dharma. And we haven't even digested our first Dharma meal. We keep eating more. Give me more. Give me more. As if somehow that's going to liberate us. Listening to the teachings, you've already heard hundreds of teachings, but when you haven't grasped the meaning of even one teaching, what's the point of more listening? Reflecting on the teachings. See, this is, you know, listen to hear the teachings, reflect on the teaching practice. He says, then reflecting on the teachings, even though you've listened If the teachings aren't coming to mind when needed, what's the point of more reflection? None. Right? He's saying, well, if you've heard the teachings, you've read the teachings, you reflect on the teachings, and yet you're still stumbling about the world in the same way, what have you been doing? If you've really been listening and reflecting, it should immediately come to mind in the situation, and you should know what to do. If we don't know what to do still, that means that what? All our reflection has not really been that meaningful or helpful. And then meditating according to the teachings. If your meditation practice still isn't curing the obscuring states of mind, forget about it. He's a tough guy. He was supposed to be just a marvelous teacher. Had no time for small talk, but talk about the Dharma, ask him a question. He'd always there. He was known as a total. He didn't discriminate. You could be a nobility, you could be a beggar. He taught everybody equally. He was considered a great master. There it is. If your meditating practice isn't curing your obscuring states of mind, forget about it. Is that clear? Many people think Dharma practice is something they do. Oh, I'm going to go meditate now. Right? I'm going to go study now. As if that's what it's about. It's not about that. As he says, it's about, are you remedying your obscurations in your mind? If you're not doing that, then what is the use of the meditation? Is that clear? There's a purpose to all this. It's not about being a good meditator. If you think your practice is based on, oh, my concentration is getting stronger, right? So what? Dharma is about the cessation of suffering. Dharma is about clearing and purifying the mind of its obscurations. That's what we should be doing. Mindfulness, concentration, or insight are in the service of that process. Is that clear? But they're not kind of entities unto themselves. I mean, many people think of meditative practice as some kind of Olympics, or I'm trying to get better at it, moving up the ladder. The Buddha rejected that 2,600 years ago. He said, I teach the cessation of suffering. That's all I teach. And then, because he's in the Vajrayana tradition, he said, you've added up just how many mantras you've done, but you haven't even accomplished the first. You may see your deities that you're visualizing very clear, but you haven't put an end to subject and object. Right? You know, you may, be able to visualize your 20,000-armed deity very clearly and see every attribute of it, but you still don't understand that that's just a projection of mind. It's not separate from you. You think it's something. Exactly. He said, that's what you need to be putting an end to. You may tame what appear to be evil spirits and ghosts, but you're not training the stream of your own mind. Your four fine sessions of meditation practice, so meticulously arranged, forget about them. When you're in a good mood, your practice seems to have a lot of clarity, but you can't relax into it. When you're depressed, your practice is stable enough, but there's no brilliance. Try to force yourself into an aware-like state. While these yogic positions and gazes keep your mind stable, only by keeping the mind tethered. Forget about them. So many people use meditation, use mindfulness, use breath practice, use all different kinds of practices as a way to tether the mind so it won't go to where they don't want it to go. The problem is what? As soon as the animal's off the tether, where does it go? Right to where it always wants to go. So that's what he's saying. Our practice shouldn't be this kind of tethering the mind, trying to control it. The mind itself has to be understood. The mind itself has to be cultivated. The mind itself has to be transformed. Does everybody know what this mind is we're talking about? That which is hearing right now. This is your mind. This is your mind. And we're talking about all the things that arise in it. The world of thoughts, the world of memories, the world of ideas, the world of emotions. All these are arising in your mind. It is this mind that needs to be purified, transformed, so it can become something else than the way you've always experienced. So he goes on and on like this. All your analytical reasoning, so precise and acute, it's just more delusion, good for nothing but goat shit. The oral instructions are very profound, but not if you don't put them into practice. Reading over and over those Dharma texts that just occupy your mind and make your eyes sore, forget about them. And then he talks about, you know, he says, you know, lamas who do these kind of ceremonies, they beat their drum, everybody's charmed by it. You hit your cymbals, you know. All this Dharma practice equipment that seems so attractive, forget about it. Right now, those students are studying very hard, but in the end, they can't keep it up. Today, they seem to get the idea, but later on, there's not a trace left. Even if one of them manages to learn a little, they rarely apply their learning to their own conduct. Those elegant Dharma disciples of yours, forget about them. This year they care about you, next year it's not like that. One year they're modest, the next year they're exalted and pompous. No comment. Those endless rounds of conversation are just attachment and aversion, just more goat shit. Obviously, a lot of goats in Tibet. Those endless rounds of conversation, just attachment and aversion, more goat shit, good for nothing. At the time, it seems marvelously entertaining, but really, you're spreading around stories about other people's mistakes. Useless talk that just makes you thirsty, forget about it. Giving teachings on meditation texts without yourself having gained actual experience through practice is like reciting a dance manual out loud and thinking that's the same thing as actually dancing. So that's for people who teach. Just mouthing the words, giving Dharma explanations, it sounds so eloquent, forget about it. When you don't have a text, you long for it. Then when you've finally gotten it, you hardly look at it. Just checking for that latest Dharma book. Look forward to getting it in the mail. Our library just grows and grows. Even if you copied down all the Dharma texts on earth, you still wouldn't be satisfied. Copying down texts is a waste of time unless you get paid for it. So forget about it. Today, they're all happy as clams. Tomorrow, they're furious with all their black moods and white moods. People are never satisfied. Or even if they're nice enough, they may not come through when you really need them, disappointing you even more. All this politeness, keeping up a courteous demeanor, forget about it. Worldly and religious work is the province of gentlemen. Patrul, old boy, that's not for you. So he says, I mean, it's extreme. He said, be like an old bull. Once they've done their work, they have no desire but to go to sleep. So he says, be like that, desireless. Just sleep, eat, piss, and shit. There's nothing else in life that has to be done. Don't get involved with other things. They're not the point. When you're lower than your company, take the low seat. When you happen to be in the superior seat, don't get arrogant. So he says, you're better off keeping to yourself. When you're without any worldly or religious obligations, don't keep on longing to acquire some. If you let go of everything, 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 that's the real point. If you let go of everything, 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 that's the real point. And then in the colophon it says, this was written by the practitioner Trime Lodro, Patru Rinpoche, for his intimate friend Ahu Shri, Patru Rinpoche, these were different names he had, in order to give advice that is tailored exactly to his capacities. This advice should be put in practice. And then he says, even though you don't know how to practice, just let go of everything. That's really what I want to say. Even though you're unable to succeed in your Dharma practice, don't get angry. I think he means here, don't be frustrated. May everything I say be a virtue. And so that's, I wanted to share that with you in the beginning. Because I think it's good advice. Did anybody else feel it was good advice? Who said yes? Why was it good advice for you?
Because in my practice, I know that I do those things with my mind, and being the awareness of it, and knowing that I'm noticing it, that it still continues to
create
somebody else tell me that that's okay.
Well, he's not telling you okay. What's
happening?
Well, that's what's happening.
Yeah. But he's waiting for it to that I can continue to practice for it not to continue to happen and to be more in the being of the. Not the doing, to continue to practice. And the foundation that you're talking about, and then I felt like that was
Good. But yes. Right. Just simply to be mindful of our stuff and yet to let it continue to run rampant is sort of what he's calling us on, isn't it? Mindfulness is not enough. We have to be willing and understanding that we want to heal and transform. We have to change. Mindfulness is very powerful in the service of that. But mindfulness can also be very powerful in the service of the status quo. So that's why I'm saying we want to talk about our mindfulness, but we first need to talk about our life and what's going on in our life. And what's really going on in my life, and where really is my mind? And what, if I'm honest, what really am I attached to in my life? And if I say I want to be awake, I want to be this, I want to be free, and yet if I look at my life, I see, where am I putting all my energies? Where am I putting all my time? I say, I see the faults of the worldly life, right? And yet, then why does the ups and downs of life and the successes and failures of life still cause me to have an emotional reaction? So it's that willingness. I mean, the reason I shared that is I think it's so important as we begin these 7 days together that we start out at this very honest place. Many of us have all kinds of illusions and delusions about where we're at. But if one of the greatest practitioners of the 19th century can say what he said, and that should be humbling to us, shouldn't it? So this is our first day of retreat. Many people in this room have been on many retreats. Some people in this room have not. Many people in this room have had many years of practice and teaching. Some may not. But I would suggest to everyone, as Patra Rinpoche said, forget it. Why don't we all begin fresh today? All your understanding, all your intellectual understanding, just forget it all. As he said at the end, just let go. Let go of all your intellectual understanding about yourself and where you're at. Let go of all your intellectual understanding about practice. And just let it all go. And then we're just here, aren't we? Fresh. When you have a fresh mind, when you hear a teaching or when you hear an instruction and you hear it as if you've never heard it before, there is that capacity in that moment to really get it. The problem is most of the time when we receive teachings and we hear instructions, we already have a template that we don't even know we have, that we're just fitting what we're hearing into. Right? We're already filtering, pigeonholing, arranging what we're hearing. That is another reason it never sinks deep, and we never really act on it. We never catch fire, so to speak. Because we have this unconscious-conscious framework that we don't even know we have, that we are filtering and arranging everything. How could anything fresh and new come out of that? They say, a great majority of our learning of any significance takes place, what, between the ages of 3 and 5 or something? It's right. Why is that? Because the mind is open. The mind is curious. The mind is fresh. That mind is still available to us. It has not disappeared. It is just covered over by what? By our knowledge, our so-called knowledge. Pachu Rinpoche said what? At the end of it all, what did he say? Let go. Let go. Let go of everything. Let go of everything you know. Everything you know about yourself and everything you know about everybody else and everything you know about the world. It's all self-created fabrication anyhow. How does that seem? Scary. How many people, when they hear that, say, that's a little scary? Anybody else think it's scary? Yeah, how many people think it's scary? There you go. Yeah. How many people get confused by it, don't have a clue what that means, to let go of everything. There you go. How many people really are happy when they hear that? Good. For those of you who said you're really terrified of it, don't be fooled by all the ones who say they're really happy. These are the type A's who always want to, you know, give the right answer. But yeah, maybe the ones who said yes, it makes them happy, don't know what they're getting into. And maybe those of you who said you're scared kind of go, oh, this is really big. I'm not committing to this without knowing a little more. That's okay. Yeah. Actually, in many ways, when we get in a few days into these deeper teachings, it can very well be summarized as let go. Letting go actually means more than letting go, because it implies that you've already picked something up. Letting go really means letting go of even of that impulse to pick up. So, thoughts arise in your mind. Anybody notice that? Right. Letting go means what? Let them be. Emotions arise in your body, mind. Letting go means what? Let them be. Let them be. stories, dramas, melodramas arise in your mind? Letting go means what? Just let them be. Hear the sound of the bird. Letting go means I just hear the sound of the bird. I don't judge it. I don't evaluate it. I don't hold on to it. I don't want it to go away, nor do I want it to stay. I've let go of trying to control anything. No longer going to control my mind. I'm going to let go of that. No longer going to control external situations. I'm going to let go of that. Over the next 6 days, I'm just going to what? What are we going to do? What are you going to do for the next 6 days? If you've given up control, what are you going to do? Just let it be. So I'm interested, again, I am deeply respectful of people who are scared. I think the ones who joyously raise their hand happy may be fooling themselves. Each of us has constructed a very tight world that we are filtering all our experiences through, and we don't even know it. We think it's reality. To let go of all that is to step into the unknown. Right? Because our fabricated world, even if it is painful, even if it is unsatisfactory, even if it's filled with melodrama, is the world that we think is real, is the world we know. It is the world that we have very consciously and unconsciously constructed for decades, and we have a lot invested in it. So to be... to really get that that's what we're talking about, and to go, whew. It's like asking one of these, these kind of suspicious, sort of paranoid gun people, you know, to give up their guns. Whew. It's big. Those people who are confused, what are you confused about? I mean, what confuses you about that? I just explained a little more very simply. We'll be obviously spending time. But anybody who raised their hands on the confusion, what are you confused about? Yes.
Yeah, what does that translate to, right, in a practical sense? For instance, you know, I work, no one gives me clothes.
Okay, stop. I'm talking about the next 6 days. Well, you're on retreat. You just try it out.
I can do that.
Okay, good. You can?
Mm-hmm.
Good. You just practice that for 6 days.
Okay.
And then when he that goes back to work, we'll talk about that before you go back to work. All right? You may be surprised that you can live a life with lots of responsibilities and projects much more freely than you do up to now. So as I said to you yesterday, this is the laboratory, right? Anybody ever has done research, you know, when you're doing an experiment, you what? You create more or less ideal conditions just to see if it works, right? But then when it needs to be replicated, you want to be able to take it out and see whether it works in real life. But first, you've got to see if it works in the laboratory. Okay? So first, this is the laboratory. Okay, see if you can perfect it here. You sounded pretty cocksure.
I was.
I think Pachi Rinpoche may have something to say to you. Okay, you know, and then we'll, when we get to the other end of this retreat, we'll talk about application, don't worry. But the important thing is, you know, to see whether in these days, in these ideal conditions, can I really let it all go and just be here? Give up the past, give up the future, give up my identities, give up my stuff, give up all my worries and my anxieties and my dramas and my, and just be here. Sounds so simple, doesn't it? I mean, what could be simpler? Good. That's my challenge to you. Right? Yes.
So in this letter...
In what?
In this letter that you wrote.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So he basically says all the teachings, everything we do to better our mind, it's all a big pile of chiens.
Right. So, because we don't really practice it.
So if I take this literal, best thing I do is to get up, go outside, sit in the middle, and don't listen to teachings and try to do anything else, right?
One could certainly... unfortunately, you signed up for a group retreat, so, you know... You can make, you know, Brian or Ken are going to come up to the meadow looking for you, so that would be an inconvenience. But that is a certain response. I mean, that actually was a typical hermit's response, right? Yeah. Just, right? And actually, Pachi Rinpoche, that's why he's so strong. I mean, that was his response. Yeah, I'll just, yeah, so go chip. Let me just go off and practice, right? Take it seriously. Cultivate, yeah. I have enough teaching, I've got enough teaching, now it's just time to practice. Yeah. But before you go up to the meadow, just please tell them that's what you're doing, okay? So, you know, and you may want to take some. You know, Pachi Rinpoche was famous. He wouldn't even live in a cave. I mean, he'd just go out there and just live on the mountainside in the open. And people who wanted to be his students had to kind of follow him out there. I mean, he just like, supposedly he was a tough guy. like that. So he just wandered about. Never gave a thought to food or shelter, you know, whatever happened, happened. As I say, people would give him offerings, he'd just give it to the next person. There's a great story, you've probably heard me tell it, where he was going to some, he had been invited to give a teaching actually on Shanti Deva's Path of the Bodhisattva, that he was very famous for his teaching. And he was traveling, just with me, he was just walking, and he came across this old beggar woman who had a pack on her back, and he said, oh, let me help you. Where are you going? And she said, I'm going to this monastery to hear this Buddhist teaching. And he said, wonderful, here, you know, let me help you. So for about 2 or 3 days or something, he just carried her pack, he cooked for her, you know what I mean? Because, you know, she thought he was in worse shape than she was, you know. And then supposedly when she gets to the teaching, lo and behold, who's up on the you know, on the main seat teaching but Pachi Rinpoche? Supposedly this is the kind of teacher he was. So again, short of walking out and going to the meadow, Gunther, you can kind of do that internally. That's really what we're talking about. Unless you really felt that your path was the path of the solitary hermit living in that kind of life, you know, that could be one response. But since most of us are not living that lifestyle or have that inclination, it has to be done in the mind. That's where the letting go is. Again, all our dramas, all your stuff, all your habit energies are all attached to a narrative about yourself and who you are and who did what and who didn't do what and what happened, and right? It's all attached to a narrative of self. a story that we have constructed about who we are and what's happened to us, and the whole bunch of emotionality that's around that. Who would we be without our story? Who would you be without your story? I invite you over these next 6 days to explore that. Yes.
As we're sitting and meditating, stuff is coming up, and we are letting go. There's no time, there's not a place for introspection, just observe it and just let it go. Is there anything else, anything we should do?
Let it go means we don't intervene. Letting go does not mean we suppress, we deny, we push away. See, some people think that's what letting go is. That's not letting go. That's holding on. It's manipulating. So letting go means so I'm glad you raised that. That's what we understand, because we're using words. Letting go means I don't grab it. I let it be. Letting it be, which means I let it unfold in the way that it is unfolding. Okay, but I don't grab onto it, I don't manipulate it, and I don't extend its life by obsessing. This is not easy. It means I just let it be. I am mindful, I am aware, I am present. Mindfulness and concentration and insight, looking deeply, can all arise simultaneously. We are often surprised that we think that we have to intellectually analyze or figure out to understand it. But often, if we are just present to, let's say, an afflictive emotion, if we are just present to it and let it be, it will tell us why it's suffering. It's a very different way of being in the world. It's like being with another human being who's suffering and just giving them a wholehearted attention and empathy and presence. And they will, in that environment, they will just tell us why they're suffering. Because they know we are interested. Does that clarify things? Yes.
If we do what you just said, we are aware, we stop, we name it, we let go. You've also said that that's only a temporary, that it's going to come back again. We're going to have to do the same thing over and over again. So will you be in the next few days talking about...
We'll be talking about lots of things in the next few days.
I mean, I don't want to be, doing this the rest of my life. I'm going to be able to...
Well, hold on. This is interesting, because what we're talking about here right from the beginning is not doing anything.
But you've said that's temporary. When you don't do anything, when you let go, that you got to go deeper somehow, because otherwise you're going to be deeper.
We will be going deeper. Don't worry. But there is no teaching deeper than letting go. Letting go is different than what you're saying. You're saying, in the past when that emotion arose, when something was triggered in you and something came up, you would do what?
Look at it, name it, be aware of it.
Mm-hmm. And? That happened all the time, every time it came up?
Was I successful?
Right. No. Okay. So we want to become more successful. Learn to let things be. Right? We go into the meal room. You know, we can either make a drama about it, right? Check the menu. I like this, I don't like that, I wonder what this tastes like, you know what I mean? Right? We can start eating and, you know, make a little drama about everything we're eating, whether we like it or didn't like it, whether it's cooked well or not cooked well, you know, right? True. We can extend the drama, you know, if we're bored by our own nonsense, we can, you know, look at everybody else's plate and start making up stories about their eating habits or lack of, right? Or else, or we could what? What's another way? Yeah, just walk into the dining room, whatever's being served, bow deeply. Enjoy whatever is put before us. At the end of it, you know, push the dishes through the opening there, where it magically gets washed. I mean, I think it's all quite magical to go down there and find all this prepared food, and I don't have to wash my own dishes. I mean, what's there to complain about? And you watch your minds. And that's just one little piece. Yes.
Is that enjoyment also something we should let go?
Again, why letting go, you're be careful, you're turning letting go into something you do. Right? Maybe that's what Tony was worried about. The letting go we're talking about here is more like let things be. Let things be. So what motion did you name? So when enjoyment arises, it arises in relationship to what? Okay, so you're just enjoying your food. Right? As you're eating it, you're enjoying it, right? And that enjoyment lasts how long? Yeah, as long as you're chewing on your food and tasting it, the enjoyment lasts. Not holding on to it for a moment more. Not needing to turn it into an experience that you think about. This food's enjoyable. That meal was enjoyable. You know? That's grabbing on. Is that clear? There's no, I mean, it's a non-interference, you know. Let's say you weren't enjoying the meal. I don't know, the rice was not cooked well. It's a little chewy. You're not enjoying the meal. Or it's a little spicy and you don't like the spice, you know? So you're not enjoying the meal. Let go. It's okay. Don't enjoy the meal. Big deal. Just like that. It's learning to be at ease with life. I mean, are we clear? So, we are practicing mindfulness. We are practicing being totally present. And we are practicing, we are taking Pachor Rinpoche's advice and letting go. All all your reactions, all your, we let go of it. Even if you're, I mean, you may be having a reaction to what I've been saying right now. Already the mind is reacting, making it into a story, deciding whether you like it or don't like it. That's just what we're talking about, isn't it? So again, today's a day to settle in. Today's a day to relax the mind, to cultivate ease of mind, just to be. Before we end, is anybody not clear about how to practice today? Yes.
Fettering.
The question is about fettering and unfettering. So something is fettering when it's tied.
Tethered.
So something is tying us. We don't even see it. Something is tethering our mind, fettering our mind, holding it so it can't be free, spontaneous, natural. Okay. Is that clear? Good. Yes.
Speaking of not letting go, does this turn your current the future?
Thank you for that very clear evidence of So again, I gave you a good dose of Pachu Rinpoche's advice to himself just to kind of wake us up and make us fresh. Whatever way we've done it in the past, we don't have to do it anymore. Let us be authentic practitioners of the Dharma. Let us have the mind of a child that is totally open and present. And let us kind of know nothing. Take the instructions to heart.